A guy by the name of Neil Anderson. He is the editor of the Gospel Advocate. And he tells a story, or has told a story in the past, about a preacher in the Nashville area. And this preacher received a phone call one evening from the local funeral home and the funeral director. And he told him, "We have a family here who has a funeral, and they don't have anyone to perform the funeral. They don't have a preacher. And so they asked specifically for you. And so will you do that?" And, "Yeah, well, of course, I'll help out, and I'll go talk to the family and see what I can do. And whatever I can do, I'll try my best to help out." And so he does that, and he went and he talked with the family. And the first thing he asked them was, "Why did you ask for me? Why did you ask for me specifically?" Because he didn't know them. And they said, "Well, you know, we belong to the Churches of Christ. And we've been members of the Church of Christ for a long time. And when we moved to the Nashville area, we never really got connected. We never found a good congregation to be a part of, didn't get connected there. But we belong to the Church of Christ. And if you will you do the funeral for us?" And he said, "Well, of course I will. I'll do the funeral. Just one question. I was just wondering, when did you move to Nashville?" And they looked a little bit nervous and a little hesitant with her answer, and they said, "1941. And I read that and I thought, well, you know what, that is true. Sometimes the worst enemy for the church is the moving van. And sometimes when we uproot and we get our stuff and we go somewhere else and for business or whatever reason, and we go and we move somewhere else, we don't get connected to the local church. And that's something that is a shame and a tragedy. And for whatever reason, it might be because the Bible class teacher is not calling to check on the kids. It might be because the minister or the elders are not coming by and visiting us with us. Or maybe we're not with mom and dad anymore, and that was really the only reason why we were going anyway. So for whatever reason, sometimes people move off, and they never get connected to a church and a part of that work. And sometimes we see our children grow up and go out into the world, and they never get connected in a congregation of any kind. Have you ever heard of church hopping? And that's something that is also a tragedy, and that's kind of similar to that. And the idea there, I don't really know what the idea is, but what it is when those certain people go from congregation to congregation. They might go over here for a while, and then they'll move, and they go over here, and then they'll go over somewhere else, and they might go to this congregation one Sunday, and to this congregation over here the next Sunday. And they're not looking for a church home. They just simply will not settle down anywhere. And that's not biblical. That's not something we find in the Bible. In fact, when we open our Bibles up and we read about the first century church, you read about it being a body of believers, and how that is a functioning body, and we as members of the Lord's body are to work together. We read about how congregations, or there are local congregations where there are elders and deacons and ministers and so on and so forth that are appointed, and they work there, and that congregation works together. And so those people that do that, they're not committing to the Lord's work for whatever reason. And what we do when we place membership, we're not saying, okay, I'm being added to the Lord's church. We're already as Christians. Of course, we're added to the Lord's church when we obey the gospel. But what we're saying is, I am committed to this congregation. And by placing membership here, I am dedicated to the work here. And you can depend on me. You can depend on me for my attendance. You can depend on me for the work here, for my contribution, and for everything else. And sometimes we don't do that. Sometimes there are people that just kind of hop around, and maybe the reason why is because they don't want to make a commitment. Maybe they're a little bit scared of commitment. But when a Christian does not get that connection with the local congregation and with brothers and sisters in Christ, they are associating with somebody, and they are going somewhere. And more times than not, that they are associating with the world. And how dangerous that can be, because once you get entangled in the world and associating with the world so much, and you get away from your brethren, sooner or later, your faith is going to be shaken, and you can even lose your faith. And we see that in the Lord's church today, and we see this so often with teenagers that go off to college and university, and they get so mixed up with the world, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment, but they get so mixed up in the world and that they lose their faith. And what a tragedy that is. We also see this in the life of David. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 27. And that's what we're going to be looking at this evening. 1 Samuel chapter 27, and we see a spell where David kind of does this. He gets a little bit mixed up about what side he's on and who he's for and where he belongs even. 1 Samuel chapter 27, this is a very familiar passage probably to every one of us. You have Saul, the king of Israel, and he is pursuing David. And David is the new kid in town. He is very popular. He has killed Goliath. Everyone knows who he is. They're singing songs about him, how Saul has killed his thousands. David is 10,000s. Everyone knows David, and they love him. And Saul is just kind of in the background, fading away, and he's jealous. And he's envious. And he wants to kill David. And so he is after David, and David is going from hole to hole, cave to cave, all over the place, trying to save his own life from Saul. But David's not alone. He's got 600 men who are with him, and they're armed men we see here. And what I don't understand, I understand David running from Saul. He does trust in the Lord, but we have to use our common sense also. So I understand David running from Saul, but I don't understand the decision that he's going to make here in this passage. I don't understand what he's thinking. Chapter 27, the first three verses. It says, "Then David said to himself, 'Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul then will despair of searching for me any more in all the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand.' So David arose and crossed over, he and 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. And David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, each with his own household, even David with his two wives." And when I read that passage, and it has never occurred to me, just studying here in Samuel, it had never occurred to me what's going on. And I almost did a double take. Did I read that right? David? The David that we know so well, the David that is the man after God's own heart? David the giant killer? David the future king of Israel? David? What is he thinking? What is he doing? He's going and he's living with the Philistines. And I don't really understand where in the world he's coming from. Now, understand Achish. And from a worldly point of view, I can understand this king, Achish, why he would want David. After all, back in those times, it was normal to hire mercenaries, to hire soldiers from other armies. For a sum, that was very common, and you could see why Achish would want David, because after all, who would know better David and his power and his might and his ability than the Philistines? But he is the giant killer. I mean, he took out their bravest and their I guess tallest and biggest man, their most mighty warrior, and he took him out. So I can understand Achish's point of view of why he would want David as a warrior. Not only that, not only is he getting a great warrior out of it, but he understands, he knows that Saul is pursuing David. And he knows Saul and Achish are enemies. And in this time, in this area, and probably even today, my enemy's enemy is my friend. Right? My enemy's enemy would be my friend. And of course, Saul and Achish are enemies here. And so you can see why Achish is wanting David. But why in the world does David go? That's what I couldn't figure out. Why does David go? I mean, what purpose? Last time, if you know this context, last time he was there in the land of the Philistines, he barely escaped with his life and had to act like a madman in order to escape with his life. And so what is he doing there in the land of the Philistines? These aren't his people. This is not his God, with a little g, I guess. It's not his God. And so what is he doing there? Well, he's going to pay and suffer the consequences of being unequally yoked, and we'll look at that passage here in a moment, with unbelievers. He's going to have great consequences of going into unbelievers and forsaking God and His people. The first thing I want to look at is that David was cut off from his own people. Look at verse 12. Verse 12, chapter 27, says, "So Achish believed David, saying, 'He has surely made himself odious among his people Israel. Therefore, he will become my servant forever.'" Odious. He's saying offensive there. He's saying that David has made himself so offensive to his own people, the Israelites, that he's going to belong to me forever. Could you imagine what David was thinking if he was to hear this? Because basically what he's saying is, David, you've burned your bridges. You've burned your bridges, and there's no going home after this. You belong to me now. And so he's there, and he basically belongs to this king. Now understand this. The king is smart enough to know that when Israel, David's own people, sees David with the Philistines, they're going to cut their ties with him. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Israelites? And they're here and they're looking at the Philistines over there, and that is their enemy, and here comes David. I mean, they think David is a hero. He is a hero. And here is David and David's men with the Philistines. What word comes to your mind? Traitor. What a traitor. What in the world is this? What is David thinking? What is he doing over there? And so this king is very smart. He knows that. Have you ever wondered that? About our people, God's people now, the church? And sometimes we see our own people mixed in with the world, mixed in with the enemy, if you will, with Satan, and their way of thinking, and we think, what are you doing? It's somebody that we love, somebody that we've known, somebody that is a brother or sister in Christ, and they've gone away, and they're out in the world, and they're mixed in and intertwined in the world, and we're thinking, what are you doing? You don't belong there. And that's exactly what's happening to David. And that's exactly what Israel's going to think. Sometimes we see this, and I told you I'd go back to this. Sometimes we see this with our kids. Sometimes our kids get to that point, they are grown, and they think that they're too big for the britches, I guess. They get the idea that, well, okay, I'm grown, and I can do my own thinking now, and I can go my own way, and I don't have to do what mom and dad says to do anymore, and I can basically disregard their warnings, and they do a lot of times. They grow up and they disregard the warnings of the preacher and the parents and the Bible class teacher and everybody else, and I can do this thing by myself. And they go off to the workplace and they go off to the university and to the colleges and they lose themselves. They go off and they forget their roots and they get mixed in with the world, and they lose themselves, and they lose their faith. And that is exactly what is happening to David. And so the first result that we see from David's decision here is that David is cut off from his own people. The second result that we see is that David begins to lose his own bearings. In other words, David begins to forget who he is and who he belongs to. Now, there's a very interesting story that you can take it home and read it. In chapter 29. There in chapter 29, you have an interesting scene. You have Achish, which is the king of the Philistines, and he's there with his army. He's there with all of his officers, and he's there with his entire army, and they're up on a hillside, and they're looking down, and guess who they're about to attack? Israel, God's people. And you can just imagine this. Here's thousands and thousands of warriors. Here's the Philistines, God's enemy, and they're about to attack. And who is at the back of the army? David. David and his 600 men are right there at the back of the army. And Achish is saying that you can trust him, you can trust David, he's been with us for a while, and he's trustworthy, and he belongs to us now. Can you imagine what Israel thought while this is taking place? To look up there and to see this army and know what's about to happen, but who is that? And they know what's going on. That's David. And he's with the enemy. I can't even imagine. They say that that David is a man after God's own heart. Now, how in the world do you go from being a man like David, someone who is faithful, someone who puts their trust in the Lord, who took one single stone and killed somebody like Goliath, someone who puts their hope and their faith and their trust and their life in the Lord's hands. How in the world does he go from that to marching out with the Philistines under their banner, under their flag, and going to fight against God's own people? How in the world does that happen? I don't know what David was thinking. I don't know if David was thinking that he would go out there and switch sides in the middle of the battle. I don't know. We could just guess what he's thinking. But my guess is David's not thinking at all. I bet that David never thought that his allegiance would be put to the test. I bet he never thought that his allegiance would be tested. He thought that he could go and live with the Philistines because he's scared to death of Saul, that he could go and live with the Philistines and never have to make a stand. And that's what it looks like he's doing, but it doesn't work like that. You know, if we live with the world and we think like the world thinks, we do what they do, we dress how they dress, and we go along in their crowds and we do what the world does, sooner or later we have to make a stand. Sooner or later we have to let them know whose side we're on. There was a story that was told in the Civil War about Sherman. And he's going through Georgia and he goes around a curve in the road, and there stands in the middle of the road an old lady. I mean, well advanced in years. And she's standing there in the middle of the road, and she's got a dress on and she's got a bonnet in her hair, and she's holding a broom and she's swinging that broom for everything she's got. And you can imagine Sherman is sitting there laughing. And he says, "Now, lady, do you actually think that you and that little broom are going to stop me and my army?" And she says, "No, I just want to let everybody know what side I'm on." And that's what we have to do. Do we let people know what side we're on? Well, the people that we work with, the people we go to school with, the people that we associate with in the world, do they know where we stand? Or do we get so mixed up with the world in the way that they think, the way that they dress, and the way that they live in general, that they can't tell the difference between us and them? I'm afraid that's the case so often. And that is the case with David here. The third result that we see from David's decision here is that he puts a lot of other souls in jeopardy. It says here, if you want to look, 27 and verse 3, it says there that David and his men's family and his own family, they went to live in this land with the Philistines. See, David thought, I guess he thought that he could take all of these people, all of their families, including his own family, by the way, and live in a land amongst idolatry, sensuality, sin, and paganism, and nothing's ever going to happen. There's going to be no bad result. You know, and I look at that and I think, you know, sometimes we think like that. Sometimes we think that, well, I am my own person. I can make my own decisions, and my decision is my life. How many times have you heard that? It's my life. I can do what I want to. You know, and I can make my own decisions, and if it hurts anybody, it's hurting me. And what we don't realize is that it hurts more than me. My dad always told me, "Son, I don't care if you believe this or not. I don't care where you are and how old you are. There's somebody always looking up to you." You might not think so, but somebody is always looking up to you, and that is the truth. I would hate to think that the decision that I've made, and I'm so self-centered thinking that, well, this is my life, I can do what I want to, but the decision that I have made is leading someone else astray. I don't want to be lost. I don't want to go to hell. I don't believe anybody here does. But the last thing, I can't even imagine losing my kids. I can't imagine losing my children. I can't even imagine. It's one thing to lose your children. It's another thing, I believe, to lose your children because of a decision, because of decisions and a lifestyle that you've lived. And that's what's happening with David here. David has made a boneheaded decision, and now all of these men are suffering because of it. Now, talking to the men here, we are the heads of our family. And I'm not saying that in a prideful way or anything like that, in a cocky way. We are, as the Bible says, we are heads of our family. Does our family know where we stand? Do we let that Do we let that be known with our family? Do they know where we stand? Do we show that? Do we show that the Lord, His work, His people come number one, first, because they're looking and they know. They know where we put emphasis. David reaches his lowest point here. David goes back from this battle scene. David goes back to Ziklag, that land, and he finds what he finds is all the families are gone. His family's gone, and all of his 600 men, every one of their families are gone. The Amalekites have come in, and they have taken all of these families and taken them away. His family paid the price because of his decision. And now his men are so mad at him that they want to kill him. And then we reach the turning point in David's life here. You know, we call him a man after God's own heart. He's not called that. We call him that because the Bible calls him that. But the Bible doesn't call him that because he's perfect by any means or because he's sinless, because we know that he's not. He's called that because he turns to the Lord, and we see that time and time again. Look at chapter 30 and verse 8. Or chapter 30 and verse 6. Here is David's turning point. David finally, at this point, finally wakes up and realizes where he is and who he belongs to. And he remembers who he is. Verse 6, "Moreover, David was greatly distressed because the people spoke of stoning him. For all the people were embittered, each one because his sons and his daughters." All these 600 men are ready to kill David because their families are gone because of David's decision. And here's the turning point, verse 6, "But David strengthened himself in the Lord, his God. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, 'Please bring me the ephod.' So Abiathar brought the ephod to David, and David inquired of the Lord." Now this is the first time, if you have looked at this context, this is the first time in about 16 months that we've heard anything about God. David has completely left God and serving God and his people. And so David has finally turned around and he has finally, you could almost see him. It's almost like he's waking up and he's looking around and, "Where am I at? What am I doing?" He realizes who he is. He realizes who he belongs to. And he's finally woke up, and who does he go to? He goes to the Lord. And he asked the Lord what to do, and to make a long story short, the Lord tells him, "You go and bring the families back. I'm going to bless it. You go, and I'll give the families back, but you go take them back." And so that's exactly what David does. In verse 18, it says, "So David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken and rescued his two wives, but nothing of theirs was missing. Nothing was missing, whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that they had taken for themselves." David brought it all back. "So David had captured all the sheep and the cattle which the people drove ahead of the other livestock, and they said, 'This is David's spoil.'" So David finally woke up. He realized, "I'm not on the right side." He inquires of the Lord, "Lord, what should I do?" And God says, "You go and make things right. You bring back the families." And God blesses him. And if you read between verse 8 and verse 18, I can't even imagine what this would have looked like. He wipes out everybody. He wipes out all the Amalekites. What a man. Think about it. What a God. Because it wasn't David. But he goes and he wipes out all of them, and he brings them all back. And then it says there in verse 20 that David had spoil from the war. Now, I want you to notice something in verse 26. Verse 26 says, "Now when David came to Ziklag, he sent some of the spoil to the elders of Judah, to his friends, saying, 'Behold, a gift for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord.'" Now that might not mean much to us, but that is a very, very significant verse. And the reason why is because back in those days, in the Middle East, when you went to battle, when you went to war against someone, and you won, and there was always spoils of war, you took those things that those people had because you won the battle. And so you took those spoils, and it was very, very common back then that you would send those spoils to whoever you were indebted to and whoever you belonged to. And so who did David send the spoils of war back to? The Philistines? No, he sent them back to Judah. And so in a sense, what David is saying is, I don't belong to the Philistines. I was wrong. I don't belong to those people. I don't belong to their gods. I belong to you. And I belong to our God, Jehovah. It's easy to get lost in a world. It's easy to get lost in the world's thinking and the world's doing, because after all, we live in the world. And the Bible tells us, come out and be ye separate, says the Lord. And what he means is not by living, but by our living. Not where we abide or not where we stay, but the way that we live. Come out and be ye separate. The verse 2 Corinthians 6:14 that we talked about a little bit earlier says, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness, and what communion has light with darkness? What's he saying there? That we cannot be friends with those who are outside the church? No. But we need to be careful about how close those ties are, because we don't belong to the world and we do not belong to Satan. We belong to God and we belong to God's people. It might be that you have wandered off and gotten lost in the world. There's a passage, 1 Corinthians 15:33, that says, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals. And that is so easily done. And it might be that we have, by our actions, we have given more time, we've given more effort to the world and the people and the different activities in the world than we give to God's people and to Him and to His service. And that's wrong. We need to make sure that we have close ties with our brethren, not only here at Tanner, but wherever we go. That is God's people. And we should be closer to those people than anyone else. And if we find ourselves ever in the world and we don't participate in the church and its activities and its functions and its services, and we are so mixed up in the things and the activities of the world, one of these days we could lose our faith. One of these days we're going to be put to the test, and whose side are we going to be on? If you need to come forward confessing sin in your life, or if you want to become a member of the Lord's church, you can do so while we stand and sing this song.